Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, just the facts. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, fun memes that I find online and I think are funny at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me this evening is Jack. I don't have a cool nickname for him yet, but I will soon. Clemens!
That's going to be really hard to fit on the business card.
You think?
It's a lot of letters. They charge by the letter.
They do?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I need to talk to them about that. Maybe if I have you knock on the door and you're, excuse me, sir, do you have a moment to talk about why you're charging us too much?
I do have some power of persuasion, some skills at negotiation.
Yeah, something like that. Right? So anyway, we're going to have a Facebook user question show since our schedule's been all messed up. And yes, I know that the episode from last week has not been posted online yet. The radio station has been kind enough to not get that to me this week. So we will have it this next week, and I'll get two up at once. And blah, blah, blah. Excuse, not my fault. Probably is, actually. But hey, blame other people. Hey, just a quick reminder. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s, ARs, and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. And also, Aridus Industries and the patent-pending QDC Quick Detach Side Saddle Shell Carrier. Available for pre-order, check out the new rigid interchangeable side saddle carrier, changing how you look at shotguns forever. Find out why Steve Fisher, Chris Fry, and myself all call it the best hard mount side saddle carrier ever invented. Would you like to know more? Visit AridusIndustries.com. They've got probably the coolest industry t-shirt I've ever seen. So even if you don't want one of those, but you want to support cool new products and small business and Merca, go give them money. So anyway, moving on. See, here's where you can mess up. It's live radio, so don't do anything that you're not supposed to.
Yay!
What's our first question, Jack?
Alrighty, from Miguel, we have, when training, especially with a not-so-well-known local instructor, if you come across something that's just downright derpy in a class, how do you handle it?
That was from Miguel?
Miguel.
Okay. Whose last name I can't remember, but maybe in the next question you'll read the full name.
His last name is Dilbert.
Hey! He's actually comments on the page a lot. So what should you do if you're at a class and you see something? Huh. I'm going to give you advice that not many people would give me credit for. But honestly, if you're at a class and you're paying someone money, I'd just see what they have to say. You're not there to argue. You're certainly not there to teach the class. You know, just if you don't agree with something, just sort of file that away or whatever. You know, here's the exception to that. If someone's being exceptionally dangerous, if they're doing something that could get you or one of the other students hurt, then, yeah, you need to speak up. You know, but if you're at a class and they're like, oh, I don't know, I carry a 45 because it will go back in time and kill the parents of my attacker and that'll just solve the problem, then, yeah, okay, maybe keep your thoughts to yourself. You know, depending on where you're at and who you are, if you want to talk to the instructor during a break or something, you're like, hey, this thing you said here, can you get into a little more detail there or tell me why you think that? You know, the thing is that I am considered by some to be somewhat knowledgeable about all this, and you know, there are very well-known instructors that I disagree with on certain topics, but that doesn't mean that they're saying something, you know, derpy per se, so much as it's a difference in opinion. You know, a really good example of that, Steve Fisher, who's a buddy of mine, his take on selecting shotgun ammunition is a little different than mine. You know, and we were both recently quoted in a magazine article about that. And, you know, I say in the article, hey, I don't agree with Steve, but honestly, you probably want to listen to him because he knows more than I do. But, you know, still don't agree with him. That makes sense? That kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you come from different worlds.
Yes. a whole new world. I'm not singing anymore. Don't do that. No. Okay.
Because I don't know the rest of the words, and I wanted to join in. Save that.
Choices here. Anyway, what's the next question? We got a couple minutes left before the break.
Alrighty, coming from Cad Bane, I hope I'm pronouncing that first name correctly. How often do you inspect your daily carry gear? For example, how often do you give your holster a look for cracks, loose hardware, belts, buckles, and other critical wear and breakage, or medical for sealed packaging?
Almost every day or every other day, you know, because I'm in the position where I get to switch guns a lot just because of what we do. Get to switch equipment a bit, you know. Trying to think what I haven't looked at in a while to see if I'm about to tell a lie or not. Can't think of anything. You know, I inspect magazines pretty regularly because I shoot carry ammo more often than most people do. Holsters I look at on a pretty regular basis as well. And, you know, occasionally I'll get like a mounting screw or something that's started to back out. But I usually notice stuff like that before it becomes an issue. You know, the thing that you want to be careful with there is that administrative handling of a firearm, especially, is when you have accidents. What I mean by that, so if we're constantly messing around with loaded guns or constantly loading, unloading guns, we are giving ourselves opportunities to make a mistake. Now, I know there's a certain subset of people that will say things like, that's a training issue, or, well, I would never, you know, whatever never is. You know, I get paid pretty well to do this stuff at this point, and I can make a mistake. I've done it before. I could do it again. You know, I am occasionally tired. I occasionally have days where, you know, maybe I didn't eat a good enough breakfast, or I don't know. I'm just thinking about other things, and an error in judgment is certainly something that is possible. So what we want to do is make situations where we limit our ability to make errors, and we have multiple levels of safety involved. And I'm not saying that we add a bunch of stuff to our gun, per se, but we have little rituals and things that we do. You know, for instance, when I'm in my office and I'm fooling around with something, I've got a safe direction in my office so that if I do have an accident, I'm not going to cook a round off into the rest of the house. You know, things like that. So if you're going to inspect gear, which is something that we need to do, just make sure that you've given it some thought and you're sort of being safe about all that. Now, this episode, we're doing your questions. We got to go to break here just a second. More when we get back. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by Dark Star Gear. Whether you know the color of the boathouse at Hereford or only know the color of your mom's basement and your Cheeto-stained socks, Dark Star Gear has a solution to your gear-carrying needs. Check out their clip-on holster for small semi-autos and revolvers or their highly adjustable full-size AWB holster. They even have a belt-wrapped sheath for popular fixed-blade centerline knives. That really tie your EDC together. That's right, I didn't do it the same way I did last week. Ha ha! Like that one rug I used to have. Wait, what? Designed, developed, and pressure tested for real life, not Instagram. Find out more at darkstargear.com. That might have been a G instead of a D. I don't know. And also, Aridus Industries and the patent-pending QDC Quick Detach Side Saddle Shell Carrier. Available now for pre-order. Would you like to know more? Visit AridusIndustries.com. So we are doing our Facebook user question show, and I have to say I am impressed with both of our professionalism because there was a commercial that played right before we came back on the air that I wanted to giggle. I'm not going to lie. I wanted to giggle, but luckily I held it together. So anyway, Jack, you've got more questions for me.
Yes, we do. Coming from John Huffman. What is the best ammunition for a 20-gauge?
Best ammunition for a 20-gauge. I'm thinking. This is my thinking face. But you can't hear that because we're on the radio.
It's a very deep thinking face.
Yeah. So what I would tell people is if there were a flight control, federal flight control load available for 20 gauge, I'd be all about that because I'm a big, giant fan of that. What you generally want to do, so here, I'll give you Steve Fisher's advice on this. What you want to do is you want to look at what your maximum engagement range is going to be. So if this is a house gun, look in your house and see what the longest shot you have. See what that is. For most people in the United States, it's going to be somewhere around 10 yards or so. Depending on, I'll be silly here, but it's true, depending on how much money you have. You know, if you've got more, you might have a longer shot. Not as much, shorter shot. Depends when your house was built to you, all sorts of things. But 10 yards is a good thing. Pick a load that is reliable in your gun that will pattern about 4 inches at that range. That's Steve Fisher's advice. Now, personally, I kind of like to have a closer pattern. I like having as much precision as possible for the longest range possible. The other thing, too, I've got a pretty long shot in my house. You know, the longest shot I could foresee taking is closer to 15 yards. If I get out onto my property, I've got easy 50-yard shots, but that's not most people. So the thing I will say is that a lot of people select 20-gauge shotguns because they are lighter and easier to control, or at least that's the common wisdom there. I'm actually of the opinion that with the right 12-gauge setup, especially with low recoil buckshot, and Federal makes a low recoil flight control round, that's about perfect, especially if you get into a semi-auto on something like the Beretta 1301, or if you want to send your gun off to Vang Comp, that's Vang with a V, they do some barrel porting on shotguns. It is absolutely amazing. You can also get them to do their voodoo work. You make shotguns patterned tighter with non-flight control rounds. Now, the thing I will say is that traditionally, if you're going to get Vang work done, flight control sometimes does not play nice with that. I've got a shotgun barrel they did that actually worked great with that, but I also told them that I would be using flight control as the primary duty load, so they may have done something different. But, you know, the number one thing is to make sure you've got a gun that's got the correct length stock on it. And most people run a much longer stock than they should, and that's where the problems occur. Something like that. So, anyway, yes. Next question.
All righty, and I've been looking forward to this one. From Nick Krulo, cutting the trigger guard, benefits?
So, for those of you that are not following the Facebook page, I posted a photo of an XD mod 2 that someone had cut the front of the trigger guard off of to mount a light. For those that don't know, the compact XDs have a short rail. You can really only get compact lights on them, like the Insight X3 or anyway, whatever. You can only get small lights on them. You can't get like an X300 or something like that. Cut the front of the trigger guard off it. They were selling the gun. I posted a photo, and I think we're 160,000 views later of people making fun of this guy, which I fully support. So what are the benefits? Let's actually talk about that from a historical context. There were certain double-action revolvers that were done, you know, in the past that had the trigger guard cut off the front of them, the Fitz Special or the Fitz Colt. It was thought that from the holster, it was quicker to get on the trigger and therefore quicker to fire the gun, and that's why they did that. Now, it wasn't a good idea back then. A lot of people will point to that and be like, well, they did it in the past. There were all sorts of things that were done in the past that were done because of gear limitations, especially in holsters. You know, there were reasons that they thought they had to do stuff like that, that we don't need to do that, number one. Number two, there's a bit of a difference between doing it on a double-action revolver with a very long, heavy trigger pull versus a striker-fired single-action gun with a 4-pound trigger pull. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is most modern holsters will retain off of the trigger guard. If you cut the front of the trigger guard off, they are no longer retaining off the front of the off the trigger guard. They're not retaining off of anything. I can't think of a single reason to do this today. Honestly, I don't agree with the reasons they used to do it in the past, but there were all sorts of things done back then that seem kind of silly to me now. So anyway, and I know that that question was a joke question that Nick was asking, but I like taking it serious and explaining, you know, why, if we can't understand the why, then we really are just repeating things that we've heard, and that doesn't get us anywhere. So if you've got a gun with a short rail on it and you want to put a light on it, don't cut the trigger guard, just get a smaller light. So there you go.
I think we're going to roll into something that's a little related. From Matt Boardman,
mm-hmm.
Quality holster versus non-quality holsters. And how do you avoid getting a drawer full of holsters before you find the right one?
On that one, I don't know that you can. You know, I'll here's some things to look for in holsters. You want to look for one that does not collapse when you draw the gun. If the mouth of the holster collapses, that is not a holster that you want to use. Exception to that is for deep, deep concealment, something like a smart carry, you know, which is like a belly band, things of that nature, where it is a very specific use, it might be acceptable, but you cannot reholster the gun wearing the holster at that point. If it takes two hands to, like, you have to hold the holster open, then put the gun in there, just don't do that. You know, here's another example of that. The Raven Concealment Vanguard 2, which we're actually giving one of those away this show. I forgot to mention that. We're selecting one of you, if we read your question on air, to win one of those. That's a great piece of kit. The thing is, it's a very specific piece of kit. And if you're going to work with it, you have to take it off to put the gun back in it. You can't reholster wearing it. So one of the things we're looking for is the mouth of the holster cannot collapse. It needs to pull the butt of the gun into the body. You know, depending on where you carry, that can be outside the waistband, inside the waistband, appendix, whatever. It needs to have some sort of mechanism for doing that. There are all sorts of things that and ways to do that, but, you know, whatever. I like for them to cover the entire length of the slide and muzzle. The reason for that is if it doesn't, you can't actually practice with it, because if you do practice with it and it's an inside the waistband, you burn the ever-loving crap out of yourself. Even if it's an outside the waistband and it doesn't cover the muzzle, you can still burn yourself. It just takes longer. Now, is that something that everyone is going to say that you need to have that? No, probably not. But it's my radio show and you asked me, so I'm giving you my opinion. Other people might have different opinions, but mine's worth exactly what you paid for it, so, which is meh. So anyway, what else? It needs to retain the gun, at least somewhat. It can't be just a gun bucket. These hands. Sorry, Jack just smashed his drink into the microphone, which is that thump that you just heard. Or he strangled a small child, one of those. That was all the struggle they put up. I could have been nice and just played that off like no one heard it. But
nope, you just shouted me out there.
Yeah, I'm going to do that.
It was going to be one thing. I was going to do something today.
You might do something else. We'll see. I was saying something, but then the big yin, he interrupted. I don't know. Oh, what else? Quality materials must retain the gun. Oh, hybrid holsters. Holsters that have soft backings. I'm not going to say don't get those, because a lot of people like them. And I know the Comptac in particular has done pretty well, where they've got a very hard leather backing that don't collapse into the holster itself. There are certain companies that use things like neoprene, and I'm not going to single anyone out, but this will be pretty easy to figure out, that are dangerous. If you've got a hard shell and then a soft back, that's a holster that collapses. That's a holster that you have to fish around with. And more importantly, the sweat shield of the holster is the floppy part. Those have this magic ability to bend out into trigger guards and pull the trigger on your gun when you speed reholster, even though you shouldn't. It's a training issue, but people make mistakes. So we want to get gear that does not set us up for failure, does not encourage or require active participation on our part to not make a mistake with. It's really important. If gear is only good if you have to fight it to work right, then it's not good gear. That's pretty simple. You know, so that's, once again, just my thoughts on that. What else? Don't buy a drop leg unless you're trying to clear armor. Here, how's that? Is that too specific?
What if you're running a smuggler ship and you wear a really good vest with it?
Maybe.
You have a really big friend that hangs out with you and he's kind of hairy.
So you're saying I need a drop leg now?
I'm kind of pointing it out to you.
Huh. Well, we'll work on this. I do have a broom handle Mauser.
Oh,
hey, look at that. It's time for the break. More of your questions when we get back. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True Product Specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. And also, Aridus Industries and the patent-pending QDC Quick Detach Side Saddle Shell Carrier. Whoever wrote this is a jerk. Available now for a pre-order. Would you like to know more? Visit AridusIndustries.com. I wrote it. I'm a jerk. Isn't that right, Jack?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
No check for you.
Oh, okay.
Wow, that was a much eviler laugh than I... Mwahahaha!
Your sudden but inevitable betrayal.
There's always two. Anyway, we are doing the Facebook user question show. Subtle nerd references. Very, very subtle. And answering your questions tonight, if we read your question on air, you get entered to win a Raven Concealment Vanguard 2 Advanced.
All right, from Michael Martinez. Will changing the Glock factory trigger out for something like a 3.5 make that much of a difference?
Well, if you can't shoot before, it's not going to magically make you able to shoot. You know, which is, so we'll talk about Glock triggers for a second. And this sort of carries over to other things. Can you do things that will make it easier for you to run a gun well? Yes. I'll give you, for instance, right now I run an SSVI tier trigger TYR, with a 3.5, so my standard minus connector. And pretty much all my serious guns, it gives me a trigger pull that I like very much. It's not a particularly light trigger pull, but the characteristics of it as far as the smoothness of the pull and where it breaks and how it breaks are what I'm looking for. If you go from like a dot connector to a minus connector, will you notice a difference? It's really going to depend on what level of shooter you are and how attuned you are to the trigger characteristics of that gun. A lot of people seem to think that a lighter trigger equals better, and that's not always the case. You know, you can actually on a lighter trigger start to see things like slapping the trigger in a way that causes you to anticipate recoil much more noticeably. Some other things as well. So what we're looking for in triggers, at least what I'm looking for in triggers, and I'd have some funny ideas about this, is a smooth, I prefer what's called a rolling break. You know, it's sort of a single stage trigger. Now, 1911s are known for having a two stage trigger, which is a, you know, you get a little bit of pre travel, then you hit that hard wall and then pull through that, and there you go. Glass rod break. I don't like those. you know, Glocks from the factory are more of a two-stage affair. I like getting it to where they're not, and they're more of a single-stage trigger. You know, everyone's different. Everyone likes different things. So is it worth playing around with? Yes. Is it worth really playing around with and disabling safeties accidentally? No. And there are some of the aftermarket Glock triggers that can do that, that will bypass the drop safety on a Glock, and that's a bad thing. A lot of people talk about don't modify a carry gun. I disagree with that. But if you modify a carry gun and it disables a safety, that's a problem. And that's something that can come back to haunt you, you know, because then arguments can be made about, well, did you intend to shoot that person? You know, there's actually a shooting I'm aware of, an agency shooting where someone put an aftermarket Glock trigger in their issued Glock 35 and got it down to 2.5 pounds on a duty gun. And, capped a guy that probably didn't need capped and, killed him, you know, deader than Jesus. And that's going to be a tough one. That's going to be a real tough one. And the gear in that case certainly matters. So I don't know. If you're going to modify your gun and if you're going to change things out, have a reason for what you're doing and be able to articulate that reason. If the only answer you can come up with for why you're doing something is because, then don't do that. You know, if what you're coming up with, well, I can control the gun better and I am more accurate with this because this affects the trigger pull in this way, then there you go. So, yeah. Was that an answer? That was kind of an answer, right?
Yeah, I think that came out well.
Okay.
And we're going to roll right into one from Corey Dean.
All right.
John, what is your preferred action in a pistol? Double action, single action, striker, single action only, double action only, or DAC? We all know training scars can happen. That being said, do you think a person should spend the majority of their practice time focused on the action that they would normally carry?
It doesn't actually matter. There are characteristics about certain things that I like over other things. You know, I like double action pistols a lot, but mainly because the trigger characteristics that I like, you know, that rolling break are something that is a lot easier to get in a double action, single action pistol compared to something like a Glock or a 1911. That's not to say you can't do it, but I mean, I'm pretty familiar with almost all of them. I've carried all of them at one point or another. That's not true. I've not carried a double action only, you know, SIG or Beretta, which like a true double action revolver style, though I have carried revolvers before, which is, you know, pretty much, actually, you know what? I have carried them all. I can't think of one I haven't. I've even carried the HKP7M13 squeeze cocker, which is its whole different action.
Nice name drop there.
Yeah, you know. That's like gun hipster stuff. I rolled my jean legs down, though. Oh, I made him giggle on air. There it is. I got my docks on, too. Yay!
Do you have a fixed gear bicycle also?
I'm too fat to ride a bike.
And some vinyl records to listen to?
I think my dad has all my vinyl records. Wow. Rush.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
I like Rush. See, the thing about vinyl is that most of the people that listen to vinyl... Well, number one, I was doing it before it was cool. Number two, the people that listen to vinyl today will listen to it on a digital record player. And then it's like, no, you're doing it wrong. Get like the old vacuum tube. Anyway, going back to the guns, which is what the show is about, there are things that I like about all of them. You know, honestly, I like double action, single action probably more than the rest of them. I like that first trigger pull being long. It's not the heavy, it's the long. Because what that does is give me a little bit more room for error to rethink what I'm doing. There's a margin for error. You know, so... but at the end of the day, right now I'm carrying a Wilson Combat 1911. I'll carry a Glock, I'm sure, at some point this week. I've got a CZP09 that I'm playing with that I'm starting to really dig. You know, I carry a Smith J-frame when I go to the gym. you know, so I'm pretty familiar with all of them. The one thing I will say is that if you go from a single action gun or a, you know, striker fired gun to a double action and actually learn to shoot that well, you are making some gains there. So, or you can make some gains there. I certainly noticed an improvement when I ran a bunch of rounds through, you know, SICK a couple of years ago. I did 25,000 rounds in 18 days, and after that, shooting a Glock was easy. So, anyway, next question.
So, this comes from Jeff Egger. So, I've been working on trigger reset during recoil, and with practice, it's doable. My question is about the tactile reset that everyone goes on and on about it. I understand the nuances of short reset, but I can't seem to feel the click when shooting Langdon-esque style.
Why do you need to feel the click would be my return question to that. So Glock's marketing has, and a lot of this is things I'm stealing from Ernie, even the way I'm going to make fun of this. So if you really want an answer to this question, go back a couple episodes, listen to Langdon. He'll go over it a little bit better than I will. But you don't need to feel the reset. The gun, you know, if you're doing it the right way, if you're not trying to shoot right to that reset point, if you're coming a little past it in recoil, you don't need to feel it. You know, it's going to be pretty apparent. I come all the way off the trigger almost. I'm, you know, because I learned to shoot on a double action revolver, and that's one of those things where if you're trying to shoot one of those fast and you're trying to ride the reset, well, there is the reset is trigger all the way out. What you don't want to do, you don't want to pin the trigger and then reset it after the gun is cycled. You want to reset and recoil. You don't want to reset to the reset point. Now, are there people that can learn to do that really well? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you only shoot one kind of gun, it can even be okay-ish. But man, I've seen a lot of people that get trigger freeze real bad when they're trying to go fast and they're stressed because that's the only way they know how to shoot. There's actually videos where you can see dash cam videos of guys that you can tell have practiced that way are putting rounds into a guy, and then all of a sudden there's like this weird break in like their shot pattern, and then, oh, they get back on it again. Well, that's trigger freeze. So what I tend to do is go past the reset point before I re-engage the trigger. That's just me. The whole tactile feedback thing is just completely unnecessary, and honestly, I think it's probably encouraging bad habits. But yeah, anyway. Hey, look, it's time for the break. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TacStrike Steel Target Systems, makers of the quarter scale steel target and the R-Train target stand, which are literally the best targets I've ever used. Hit their steel targets with more than 60,000 rounds of rifle, pistol, and shotgun ammunition without a single problem. For more information, visit them at TacStrike.com. And also, Aridus Industries and the patent-pending QDC Quick Detach Side Saddle Shell Carrier. Available now for pre-order. Check out the new rigid interchangeable side saddle carrier, changing how you look at shotguns forever. Find out why Steve Fisher, Chris Fry, and myself all call it the best hard mount side saddle carrier ever invented. Would you like to know more? Visit AridusIndustries.com. So we're doing a Facebook user question show tonight. Hey, something that I forgot to mention that I probably should have. We are running a class with William April and Paul Sharp December 19th and 20th up at the Alliance Ohio Police Training Facility. It's their William's awesome unthinkable lesson block. So we're going to be talking about victim selection, how to avoid being selected, and a cool, cool shooting block with Paul Sharp about recoil management, shooting on the move, cold weather shooting issues for concealed carriers, which to the best of my knowledge is not ever covered anywhere. So this is going to be a super cool class. Can get signed up for that by sending me an email, john@ballisticradio.com. Cost right now before November 15th is $375, and we've got a deal set up with the hotels up there, so it's only like $80 a night. Should be a really cool class. It's filling up pretty quick, so if you want to get in on that. Send us an email. Anyway, more of your questions.
All right, from Brophy John. How often do you incorporate empty hand training into your shooting training?
Not as much as I should. I mean, that's an honest answer. I've taken ECQC. I've done Cecil Birch's immediate action combatives. I just butchered the name of his class, and I'm sorry, Cecil. It's been too long. It's something I've given thought to. I've worked on it a little bit. You know, if I wanted to be a little bit more well-rounded about it, I would probably go and roll jits, you know, once a week, more if I could. It's something that's important to have and probably something that not enough people focus on. So how often do I incorporate it? I think I just answered that question by saying not enough. Mm-hmm. So not often enough. Something I will say is that, you know, I was offered an auxiliary position with a police department that I'm working on unfatting myself for right now. And certainly by the time that I get into that, I will have worked it a lot more just because my risk profile will certainly dictate that. You know, so have I given it thought? Yes. Have I trained it? Yes. Do I train it enough? Probably not. So that's an answer, right?
Yeah, it seems like an answer.
It seems like an answer.
If only you had someone here with you that would, like, love that kind of training and did it a lot himself.
Yeah.
That could help.
Yeah. If only they weren't 6'7 and 380 pounds and scary looking and stuff.
Just because the encounter level's too high for you doesn't mean anything. You still get to do it.
Ah, a nice D&D reference there. Anyway, moving forward.
All right, from Hiram, whose last name was a little hard for me. I'd like to hear your thoughts on the roles of a fixed blade centerline knife.
Well, the most important part there is if you're going to carry one, make sure it's legal where you're at. Because you want to obey all local laws. Caveat placed in front of my statement. How important is it? Incredibly. I think that it is a very overlooked item. You know, a lot of people say, well, I carry a folding knife, so I'm set. No, no, you're not. Having watched this stuff happen a lot, I've yet to see anyone actually get one out in any sort of timely manner when they're doing this force on force. We sent a guy up to ECQC a couple weekends ago that I'm going to do a video interview with once I get around to it that actually made a statement. It's like, well, I would just do this. And what it was, if someone tried to grab his gun, he would deploy his folding knife and take care of the problem. Well, doesn't quite work that way. Now, when I went through ECQC, I was in the worst shape of my life. I got my butt handed to me repeatedly. The one thing that I was always able to do, which surprised me, was access my fixed blade and center line knife with either hand. And once I got that out, I did some good work with it. You know, there are a lot of advantages. One of them being deployment's pretty easy if it's put in the right spot. Retention is amazing because the only way they can take it from you is blade first, and that don't work so good in real life. And yeah, you can do a lot of damage with one. Now, one thing I will say is that you need to make sure that you don't have an unrealistic expectation about what that's going to get you. The problem is most of the folks that get stabbed in actual fights don't know they've been stabbed at all. So this is a repeated effort thing until they notice. And you can create space to either get away or if you have to go to guns, go to guns. The other thing, too, is that you need to be very aware that a knife is deadly force. You are using deadly force on someone, and you need to be as justified to go to a knife as you would be to go to a gun. So just keep that in mind as well. Anyway.
All righty. Justin Wyke. When choosing a self-defense ammo for a firearm with a shorter barrel, LC9 Shield G43, should a person looking for loading a tailored specific round for short barrels, or will a standard self-defense load work fine?
Most of the time, a standard self-defense load will work fine, honestly, all the time. I've done some testing. So we'll talk about this for a second. Depends what caliber you're carrying and what short is. So 45 was designed around a 5-inch barrel. Once you get under 4, you start to see a major drop-off in performance. So, you know, I know some people that carry, like, the Micro 45s, like a 3.5-inch barrel. Then you want to look at something like a copper hollow point, like the TSX, whoever's loading that. You know, the Corbon DPX or the Barnes TAC XP or whatever it is. Those work well at lower velocities. 9mm and 40 caliber were designed around a 4-inch barrel. So for like the compact guns that are 3.5, 3.25, those aren't really too bad. Once you get under 3 in a 9mm, then you need to start paying attention. 380, you probably want to carry a non-expanding round anyway, because that's where you're going to get the penetration that you need to reach the vital organs. The thing about that, if you're going to do it, carry around that's reliable and, you know, a match grade ammo, something that's got pretty good QC. Thing with target ammo in a 380 is most of it is target ammo QC, which is very questionable. So even though I know it's probably better for me to carry an FMJ in a 380, I'm carrying a gold dot. Reason for that, it's more accurate than the target stuff I can find, and it goes bang when I pull the trigger. You know, I don't carry a 380 as a primary too often, and that's one of the reasons why. So anyway, we got enough time for one quick question, maybe.
I think we got a quick one here. From James Bond. I don't know if that's your real name on Facebook, man, but...
James T. Bond?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's his real name.
What type of iron sight would you suggest if tritium is not a liked option?
As someone that is moving away from tritium sights, even though... So if I'm going to do a tritium sight, I'd pretty much stick exclusively with the Trijicon HD. The things that I have liked lately, I like the Warren Tactical Fibers. And I also have been playing with the Dawson adjustables on a Glock. I dig those a lot. My preferred setup right now seems to be a really thin fiber front and a decent size blacked out rear. You know, Dawson, Wilson Cobbett makes a good one. Hey, if you like what I do, go buy something from them because, hey, they pay me. So thank you, Wilson Cobbett. You want to support them when you can. Put quality programming on, like Ballistic Radio. So, you know, but the Dawson adjustables seem pretty cool. They've held up more than I thought. The Warren Tactical's good. Wilson Combat's good. You know, the main thing is finding a rear that you like, coupling it with a front that you like, and going from there. If you like iron sights that don't have fiber, you know, any one of those. I think my preferred setup, and I'm waiting for the light to come out that has it set up the way that I could actually carry it, is going to be a fiber... you know, front, blacked out rear, and then a weapon-mounted light that's also got a green laser. The ones that are available right now, I've not been a fan of either for durability issues or form issues. You know, but the Steiner E-Optics S-Ball should be out sometime this year, hopefully. And when that works out, I think that might be a winner. So we'll see. Awkward amount of time. Here, quick. One quick one. Do we got one left? No. Man, nothing. Why are you a brony? Who asked that? I don't know. Why do you love My Little Pony so much, Jack?
I really don't. It was a running gag for a while that a friend of mine realized how much I hated it, so he photoshopped me into a bunch of My Little Pony situations and put it onto a ton of brony sites.
Well, that's funny because actually someone messaged us a photo of you in a plate carrier with My Little Pony that I will be posting right meow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Thank you, whoever that was. I think I know.
Yeah. So anyway, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.